We're going to talk about the metastatic bone disease and pathological fractures chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayette. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us, read the book. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a really important topic in musculoskeletal medicine, metastatic bone disease and pathological fractures. And, you know, this isn't just theoretical stuff, it's something with huge practical implications, mostly because it's actually, well, pretty common.
It really is. And maybe to start us off, let's lay out two key pearls right away. These should sort of frame how you think about this whole area. First one, and this often surprises people, most malignant tumors you find in bone are metastases.
Not primary bone cancer.
Exactly. They're way, way more common than primary bone tumors.
Right.
So that immediately changes your thinking when you see a bone lesion.
Okay, that's a big shift. And the second pearl.
The second one is this principle. Do the last surgery first. It sounds cryptic maybe, but it's a core idea for how we approach surgery in these cases. It's all about durability and quality of life. We'll unpack that as we go.
Got it. Two really strong starting points. So think of this deep dive as your guide through the key questions and answers from Orthopedia, giving you a solid, practical understanding. Let's start right at the beginning. What is metastasis exactly, and why is it such a big deal in orthopedics?
So metastasis is just the process where cancer spreads from where it originally started the primary site to other parts of the body. Basically, tumor cells break off, get into the bloodstream or the lymph system, and travel.
Like seeds spreading.
Kind of, yeah. And the skeleton bone is a really common place for these cells to land and set up shop. And like I just said, these skeletal metastases, mostly from carcinomas, are actually the most common type of malignant bone tumor we see. Way more common than tumors that start in the bone.
So if you see a malignant lesion in bone, the first question is usually, where did this come from? Not what kind of bone cancer is this?
Precisely. That's the key mindset shift.
Okay. And because these metastatic cells aren't normal bone, they must weaken it. Which leads us to the term pathological fracture. But, I mean, isn't any fracture kind of pathological? Doesn't it mean the bone wasn't strong enough?
That's a really fair question, actually. Uh-huh. And the definition is quite specific. While, yes, anything breaks if you hit it hard enough, a pathological fracture is one that happens from a load that wouldn't normally break a healthy bone.
Okay. The bone was already weak?
Exactly. It's weakened by some underlying disease. The two big culprits are tumors, which is our focus, and metabolic bone diseases like, you know, osteoporosis. With cancer, the bone gets weak, either because the tumor cells are physically replacing normal bone, or sometimes because the tumor messes with hormones that affect bone, or even because treatments like steroids weaken the bone.
So it's that pre-existing weakness that's the defining feature. Okay. So what do these metastatic lesions actually do to the bone? What's their nature?
Well, typically they're what we call osteolytic. This means the tumor cells basically ramp up the activity of osteoclasts. Those are the cells that normally break down bone. So the tumor actively eats away at the bone.
And the consequences.
Big ones. You get pain from the bone destruction, obviously a much higher risk of fracture, and sometimes hypercalcemia, too much calcium in the blood because it's getting released from the broken down bone.
Okay, so that's osteolytic bone destroying. What else?
Sometimes you see osteoblastic lesions. These actually involve increased bone formation. Prostate cancer metastases often look like this. And then you can have mixed lesions with bits of both happening, like you might see with breast cancer.
But wait, if it's forming more bone, isn't that stronger?
You'd think so, but no. It's crucial to understand that even with osteoblastic or mixed lesions, the bone that's formed isn't normal. The architecture is all wrong. Think of it like building a wall with bricks just piled up randomly instead of laid properly. It might look dense, but it's structurally unsound, so it's still weak and prone to fracture.
That's a key point. Even bone-forming lesions are weak.
Okay, given this weakness, and you mentioned the spine earlier,
mm-hmm.
How critical is imaging if a cancer patient comes in with new back pain?
Oh, incredibly critical. You need a very low threshold for imaging. Cancer loves to go to the spine, and that can cause terrible pain, make the spine unstable, and worst case, compress the spinal cord.
Which is an emergency.
Absolutely. Mm. So patient with known cancer, new back pain, start with a plain x-ray. If that shows anything suspicious, even something subtle, you go straight to an MRI. The MRI lets you see if there's actual cord compression. Delaying diagnosis here can lead to permanent neurological damage. You really have to move fast.
Okay, urgency is key. Now, what if someone shows up with a destructive bone lesion, but you don't know they have cancer? How do you even start figuring out where it might have come from? Which cancers are the usual suspects for spreading to bone?
Right. This is a common scenario. And there's a fantastic mnemonic for this. BLT with a kosher pickle.
BLT with a kosher pickle.
Okay.
Yep. It stands for breast, lung, thyroid, kidney, and prostate. These are the solid organ cancers that most commonly metastasize to bone.
So it helps narrow things down immediately.
Exactly. It's super practical. You find a lytic lesion, primary unknown. This tells you what tests to consider first: PSA for prostate, maybe chest imaging for lung, mammogram for breast, check the thyroid. It guides that initial workup efficiently.
That's really useful.
And one more important thing about that list: kidney or renal cell and thyroid cancers. Their metastases are often hypervascular, extremely rich blood supply.
Meaning they bleed a lot.
A lot. Potentially life-threatening bleeding during a biopsy or surgery. So if you suspect one of these, you absolutely need to think about getting interventional radiology involved before you touch it. They might need to do an embolization block off the blood vessels feeding the tumor to make the procedure safe.
Wow. Okay. Good to know. Before we get deeper into treatment, let's just quickly remind everyone where this great info comes from. We have been talking about a chapter from the free and peer-reviewed textbook, Orthopedia at www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayette. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. All right, so we have a handle on diagnosis and the types of lesions. Let's talk treatment. When you're facing an impending fracture, or one that's already happened, how is fixing that different from fixing, say, a regular fracture from a fall?
It's quite different, actually, even though we might use similar implants. First, you have to remember these patients have a systemic disease that's likely progressing. Their overall condition might decline.
Right. It's not just a broken bone in an otherwise healthy person.
Exactly. Second, they might be immunosuppressed from the cancer or the treatment, which affects infection risk and healing. Wound healing itself can be compromised, so you need to be extra careful with the surgery and closure.
Okay, what else?
Care needs to be coordinated. You're working closely with their oncologist, radiation oncologist, other specialists, and maybe the biggest surgical difference.
Mm-hmm.
Normal bone healing often just doesn't happen here. The tumor might be right in the fracture gap.
So the bone won't mend itself?
Not reliably, no. Which means you rely heavily on bone cement PMAA during the surgery. You use it liberally to fill any gaps left by the tumor or the fracture itself, providing immediate mechanical stability. The implant plus the cement is what holds things together.
Makes sense. No waiting for biology that might not happen.
Right. And finally, the patient's prognosis weighs heavily. If life expectancy is limited, you really want a procedure that gets them up and comfortable as quickly as possible, with the lowest chance of needing another surgery later.
And that sounds like where the do the last surgery first idea comes back in.
Exactly. It often means choosing a more robust, definitive fixation up front, even if it seems like a bigger operation initially, because the goal is durability and minimizing recovery time and the risk of reoperation. It's a principle that actually applies pretty well to fragility fractures in the elderly, too, by the way.
That's a really important perspective. So before you jump into that definitive treatment, you need to be absolutely sure what you're dealing with. How do you confirm the diagnosis, especially if the patient already has known cancer elsewhere?
This is absolutely critical. You cannot make assumptions. Even if a patient has known metastatic disease, say multiple spots in their lungs or liver, the first time you identify a new lesion in bone, you must get a tissue diagnosis via biopsy before definitive treatment.
Even if they have known breast cancer, for example, and it looks like a typical breast met.
Yes, even then. Let me give you a stark example. A woman with known breast cancer shows up with a lesion in her femur. Mm-hmm. It looks blitic. It's incredibly tempting to just assume it's another breast met. But what if it's not?
What else could it be?
It could be a primary bone sarcoma. Or it could be a metastasis from an unknown renal cell carcinoma. Now think about the implications. If it's sarcoma and you treat it like a breast met by putting in a standard intramedullary nail, you risk seeding tumor cells down the entire medullary canal. Catastrophic.
Oh, wow.
And if it's that hypervascular renal cell carcinoma we talked about, and you operate without embolization, massive, potentially fatal bleeding. So that first bone lesion, biopsy first, no exceptions.
That really drives the point home.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier the importance of MRI for spinal mets and potential cord compression. Can you elaborate a bit more on why MRI is so vital there, especially before any intervention?
Right. So spinal mets can cause instability, pain, but the big worry is spinal cord compression. This can lead to progressive weakness, numbness, loss of bowel or bladder function,
no.
really devastating neurological problems. And the key thing is, outcomes are much worse if treatment is delayed.
Time is critical.
Absolutely. Early diagnosis is everything. MRI is essential because it shows things plain x-rays can't show. The extent of any tumor pressing on the spinal cord, the epidural mass, how much the cord is actually compressed, and any spread into the surrounding soft tissues. It gives you the full picture you need to plan urgent treatment, whether that's surgery, radiation, or both.
And is there a specific rule about timing the MRI relative to doing a biopsy if a biopsy is needed for a bone or soft tissue lesion?
Yes, there's a golden rule. MRI before biopsy. Always.
Why is that?
Because the biopsy itself, the needle track, the bleeding, the inflammation afterwards, can significantly distort the appearance of the tissues on MRI. It can create artifacts that mimic tumor or obscure the true tumor margins.
So it messes up the picture.
Exactly. It makes it much harder to accurately diagnose the extent of the tumor and plan surgery effectively. Getting the MRI first gives you a clean, undisturbed view. It helps plan the best biopsy approach too, one that won't contaminate areas you might need for a later, larger surgery. And it goes without saying, these biopsies should really be done by teams with expertise in musculoskeletal oncology.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, so you get the biopsy done right. What are the technical options for doing that biopsy?
Generally, two main ways. For lesions that are small or deep, where getting there with open surgery would be a big deal, a needle biopsy is often the way to go, usually guided by CT or ultrasound.
The challenge there is getting enough tissue.
That's the main challenge, yes. Mm-hmm. Getting a sample that's big enough and representative enough for the pathologist to be certain about the diagnosis, sometimes you need multiple passes.
And if needle biopsy isn't enough?
Then you might consider an open biopsy. But if you do this, you have to be incredibly careful about how you do it. The incision needs to be small, placed exactly where a future larger incision for definitive surgery might go, so it can just be removed entirely later. You need meticulous control of any bleeding, and you absolutely must avoid contaminating nearby muscles or compartments.
So plan ahead for the potential next step.
Always. And it's usually a good idea during an open biopsy to send a small piece for a frozen section right then and there. The pathologist can give you a quick preliminary read to confirm you've actually gotten diagnostic tissue, even if the final diagnosis takes longer.
Okay. Diagnosis confirmed, maybe the fracture is fixed. What about other treatments? What role do adjuvant therapies play?
Adjuvant treatments are therapies used in addition to the main treatment for the bone lesion itself, like surgery. So typically we're talking about chemotherapy or radiation therapy. Many patients with mets are already on chemo for their systemic disease.
Right. So how does that affect surgery timing?
You have to consider it carefully. Chemo can lower blood counts, impair healing. So ideally, you'd time elective surgery for when the patient's counts have recovered sufficiently, usually a few weeks after a chemo cycle.
And after the fracture is fixed.
It's almost always essential to follow up with some form of adjuvant treatment, usually radiation therapy to the site, sometimes chemo depending on the cancer type and overall plan. This is crucial to control the tumor locally, prevent it from growing back around the implant, and hopefully provide pain relief.
Does radiation work for all types of metastases?
Most are quite radiosensitive, thankfully. Carcinomas like breast, lung, prostate, and round cell tumors like lymphoma or myeloma usually respond well. The big exception, again, is renal cell carcinoma. It's generally radio resistant, which makes it tougher to manage.
And you mentioned embolization before for those bleeders like renal cell.
Yes, and it's worth repeating for renal cell, thyroid, and sometimes multiple myeloma or plasmacytoma. These can be incredibly vascular. If you know the diagnosis, especially renal cell, preoperative embolization by interventional radiology is often standard procedure to reduce surgical blood loss. If you're unsure but suspicious, it's worth asking for the consult. They'll only embolize if they see significant vascularity that poses a risk.
Okay. This leads us to another concept, prophylactic fixation. What is that, and how do you decide whether to do it? Sounds tricky.
It is tricky. Prophylactic fixation means operating on a bone lesion before it actually breaks, fixing an impending fracture. The idea is to prevent the fracture from happening.
What are the pros and cons?
Well, the big pro is preventing the pain and disability of an actual fracture. Also, surgery to fix an impending fracture is generally less complex, maybe less blood loss, and often has better functional outcomes than fixing a bone after it's already broken into pieces. The con, of course, is that you're doing surgery that maybe wasn't strictly necessary yet.
So it's a judgment call.
Very much so. It requires really careful assessment of the lesion's size, location, the type of bone, the patient's activity level, and importantly, shared decision-making with the patient. You weigh the risks of surgery against the risks and consequences of a fracture. Sometimes a key factor is mechanical pain. If the patient has pain specifically with weight bearing or using a limb, that strongly suggests the bone is structurally compromised and might push you towards prophylactic fixation.
Right. The bone is basically crying out for help. Okay, let's pull all the surgical threads together. What are the absolute key things to consider when operating on metastatic bone disease?
Okay, key surgical points. First, pre-op planning. You need imaging of the entire affected bone, often a bone scan too, to look for other lesions. You absolutely want to avoid putting in fixation that ends right next to another weak spot.
Because it could just break there instead.
Exactly. That's why we often use long intramedullary nails that span the whole bone, say the whole femur or humerus. Second, the fixation needs to be strong enough for immediate weight bearing. Remember, limited prognosis often means prioritizing rapid return to function. The old saying was the construct should be strong enough for the patient to push their stretcher back to recovery.
A vivid image.
It emphasizes the goal. Third, remember, pathological fractures don't heal normally. Forget bone graft. Use bone cement, often lots of it, to fill defects and provide immediate stability.
Cement is key.
Absolutely. Fourth, while minimally invasive surgery is great for many trauma fractures, it's often less suitable here. You usually need an open approach to really see the fracture, clean out any tumor, and make sure you fill all the gaps properly with cement. Trying to do it minimally might risk missing something.
So open approach is often better here.
Generally, yes. And finally, if the bone is just too destroyed by the tumor, especially around a joint, don't be afraid to consider a segmental replacement prosthesis, basically replacing a whole section of bone with metal. It provides immediate, durable stability when standard fixation might fail.
And all this comes back to?
Comes back to perform the last operation first. Choose the definitive, durable solution up front to minimize the chance of failure and the need for more surgery down the road, allowing the patient the best possible quality of life for the time they have. It's not about being overly aggressive. It's about being appropriately definitive.
That really clarifies the philosophy. Okay, to wrap up the core discussion, let's cement some key ideas with five important terms from the Orthopedia chapter. Understanding these really helps synthesize everything we've talked about.
Sounds good. Let's do it. First, metastatic disease. Just to reiterate, this is cancer spread from a primary site. Why it matters. It's the most common malignant bone tumor, which fundamentally shapes your diagnostic approach.
Number two.
BLT with a kosher pickle. Remember the mnemonic. Breast, lung, thyroid, kidney, prostate. Its value is purely practical. It helps you quickly narrow down the likely primary sources when you find a bone met with an unknown origin. Saves time, focuses the workup.
Okay, third term.
Pathological fracture. The definition's key. A fracture from a load that wouldn't break normal bone. It underscores that underlying disease, the tumor weakening the bone, is the root cause, distinguishing it from traumatic fractures.
Number four.
Prophylactic fixation. This is that concept of operating before a fracture happens, on an impending break. It highlights the complex decision-making involved balancing the benefits of preventing pain and potentially easier surgery against performing an operation that isn't emergent.
And the fifth, final term.
Perform the last operation first. This is that crucial surgical principle. It's about choosing the robust, definitive fixation strategy up front to maximize durability and minimize the need for reoperation, especially given the patient's prognosis and the goal of rapid functional recovery. It favors definitive solutions over potentially less reliable minimalist approaches.
Excellent. Those five terms really encapsulate the core concepts. We have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayet. It is available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.